Welcome back. On July 1st of last year, Fred Pistello took over as president of St. Louis University. He assumed that role during a time of some turmoil at the university, centering on issues that ultimately led to the retirement of Pistello's predecessor, Father Lawrence Biondi. Pistello gets high marks from faculty and students for his stewardship, including how the university handled on-campus demonstrations following the death of Michael Brown in Ferguson. St. Louis Public Radio's Dale Singer sat down with Pistello and asked him about first-year surprises.
So it's been an extraordinarily busy year, learning both SLU and St. Louis, getting to know our students, faculty, staff, trustees, stakeholders, alumni. So it's been very exciting, very busy. We've accomplished a lot. Over the course of the year, I set three priorities in my inauguration. One was to answer the question, what must we become and establish a strategic plan? Secondly, I said we have to grapple with the biggest challenge for private higher education now, which is the issue of access, affordability, indebtedness. And third, I said we have to become an even better partner with others for improving the region. We've been working on those. The strategic plan has been developed through a highly inclusive process, has come along nicely. We've made a commitment to building residence halls and are well underway on the first and considering a second. It's always nice to have construction going on campus. Probably the biggest project, one of the most complex, is we are reacquiring St. Louis University Hospital from Tenet Healthcare and joining now with SSM Health here in St. Louis. That's a huge deal for us and one that's very positive. So it's been, and those are just some of the things that have been taking place. It's been a very busy year. Lots going on.
Let's take the priorities one at a time. What must St. Louis U become and how are you going to get there?
Yeah, I think we aspire to be one of the premier, absolute top Catholic universities. And I think we're very close to being that. We are a Catholic Jesuit, as I like to say, Catholic Jesuit, urban international residential research university. And I came into an institution which was very strong and very much on the move. And I think that continues to accelerate. One of the things that I have been most struck by and most pleased by is how sincerely committed to our mission our students, faculty, staff, alumni, and stakeholders are. They believe deeply in the mission of the institution and want to see us live it even more deeply.
How do you use that enthusiasm and that dedication to get to where you want to go?
So I think that's what the strategic plan, when it's ultimately finished, will serve as our guide. Through a highly inclusive process involving hundreds of people, we are now finalizing our priorities for moving forward. Clearly, it will involve a renewed commitment to academic excellence, academic rigor, education of the whole person, excellent medical care, but compassionate medical care. And then how do we drive excellence through all that we do? And that's what we're considering now, Dale.
And how do you do that and keep it at a reasonable cost?
Yeah, so I think you have to look at areas where you can be more efficient, areas where you can save, and then areas where you can increase revenue. Clearly, part of it is fundraising. And I'm pleased to say we're having one of our most successful years ever in the fundraising department.
And you've got a bicentennial coming up. Will you have some sort of campaign in connection with that?
Right. So a strategic plan typically leads to a campaign, and most organizations, particularly of our size, are typically just coming out of a campaign, just going into a campaign, or just concluding a campaign. I believe that's one of the things that's being discussed and considered, and I appreciate your mentioning that we are about to celebrate our 200th anniversary in 2018, First University West of the Mississippi.
So usually campaigns like that take a lot of planning. Are you a little behind?
No, I don't think we're a little behind. I think that we are starting to think about exactly where should we be if that's what we intend to do. Of course, it will require the support of our alumni and the endorsement of our trustees, but we're talking about that and what we might do in that area.
So the third priority was the relationship between the university and the community.
Yes, exactly.
How has that progressed, particularly in the light of when – the one thing I do want to talk about in a little bit more depth, which is what happened in Ferguson and what happened on your campus in response.
I have been struck by the number of initiatives that we have going on throughout the St. Louis region, from our many initiatives in healthcare to direct support, participating in various committees. I've actually hired two recent graduates, college graduates, graduate of SLU and a colleague of his, to try to begin to systematically catalog all of the efforts in which we are involved, and hoping that that can lead us to be even more strategic. I'm also working with the heads of the other universities in the region, particularly those centered in or contiguous to the city of St. Louis, to talk about how we can better coordinate our efforts. So I think it starts by getting a handle on knowing more fully what it is we are doing and then where we really want to set our priorities.
I've heard something about a higher education collaborative that is in the discussion stages. Is that what you're talking about?
Could be. I'm not sure what you heard.
Well, I mean, is there some sort of collaborative? I saw some sort of memo that's being distributed apparently among universities, like what you're talking about.
Yeah, nothing's been finalized yet, but we are talking, the presidents and chancellors are talking about coordinating our efforts.
To what end?
To see how we can have more of an impact by working collaboratively together.
Any particular areas you'd like to have that impact?
I think it would be across a range of areas. Those of us with medical schools obviously can make a great contribution in terms of the healthcare of the region. Public health is one, all the way to how can we better help with legal assistance? How can we better help with the establishment of entrepreneurial businesses in our schools of businesses? So we're looking at the range of activity.
Did this grow out of Ferguson, for want of a better term, or was this something that you had envisioned possibly happening on your way in?
No, I think that these conversations were happening prior to my arrival about greater collaboration. I think that the events of the region probably accelerated people's thinking of the collaboration might be something where we could operate more effectively.
Talk about the effect of what happened in Ferguson and the aftermath on your campus in general and specifically the Occupy SLU movement.
So I think clearly none of us could have anticipated what happened in Ferguson, nor the impact it would have locally, nationally and internationally, in focusing attention on St. Louis. And, of course, we know that subsequent to the shooting of Michael Brown, there have been other incidents in major cities across the country demonstrating that St. Louis is not alone in facing these challenges. So it has focused the attention of the region and focused the attention of my university on issues of violence, on issues of education, on issues of racism, on issues of opportunity. And there's no question that we have work to do here and across the region in these areas. I know a primary concern is the metropolitan fragmentation here, and how do we begin to get greater efficiencies, get more professionalism, be able to manage some of these problems and respond to them in a more effective way. These are longstanding, substantial challenges, but I get a sense that the leaders of this community are sincere in wanting to make positive change, knowing we have to make positive change.
And a university's best role in getting these priorities taken care of is what?
Yeah. So clearly, as universities, colleges, our best role is the creative and intellectual power we can bring to deepening understanding of the issues and talking about what the most effective solutions might be. Add to that, in the healthcare field, our ability to try to improve public health and medicine.
So talk about the Occupy situation. Someone was telling me that were you awakened in the middle of the night and told that there were demonstrators on campus? And this, how did you respond to that, both immediately and as the situation developed?
Sure. So it was a Sunday night, I believe it was October 13th at 1:30 in the morning, when I was called by Jim Moran, our head of public safety, and informed that a large group of protesters were moving north on Grand Avenue and likely to turn onto the campus. And that was – they did and ended up marching to the clock tower. And as a result of that, a group of them decided to stay and stayed through that week until Saturday.
So when you were told they were there, was it a split-second response? Had you considered this was going to happen so you'd had a chance to think about it in advance?
No, we did not anticipate that a group of demonstrators would come onto the campus, and we certainly did not dream in advance that there would be an encampment.
So when you heard that there was, you had obviously options. You could block them. You could evict them. You could let them stay. What went through your mind, and how did you finally reach the decision that you did?
Sure. So once we realized this happened Sunday night, once we realized Monday morning that a small group had decided that they were going to stay and form the encampment, then obviously you've got to think about what is your response to that. The response ranges from trying to forcefully evict them to engage in conversation with them. I think my senior team and I gathered. We talked. We formed a crisis management team. It involved the senior leadership, student representation, faculty representation, representation from our public safety department and from risk management. And we said, how do we respond to this? And so we literally asked ourselves, what would Jesus do? What would St. Ignatius do? What would Pope Francis do? What course should we take? We decided to try to engage them in dialogue to find out what is it that they wanted? Why were they there? What would it take for them to peacefully end the encampment? So we spent several days working to engage them and talking about the issues that brought them there. The first night of the encampment at the clock tower, they had what they called a teach-in. And some 500 students and some of our faculty and many of the Jesuits, and I went out there to listen to what their concerns were and to try to begin to establish some common ground.
But even before the Monday morning meetings, you must have had to make some sort of decision at 1:30 in the morning. What made you decide to say, let them stay?
The decision that had to be had on Sunday night was when the group was marching up Grand, do we try to prevent them from entering the campus? And I was on the phone with Jim Moran, our head of public safety, about what was that decision, try to stop them or allow them to come onto the campus. To try to stop them would have resulted in a direct confrontation and probably, given how porous our campus is, an unsuccessful effort to keep them off. So to me, that decision was relatively easily made, allow them to come onto the campus.
As the situation evolved during the week, what were your feelings about how it was going to end and what kind of actions you could take to bring it to a successful, peaceful conclusion?
Yeah. So the demonstrators were peaceful throughout the week. No property was damaged. No one was hurt. I was hopeful that we would be able, through conversation, to resolve the situation and have them peacefully resolve it rather than engage in an attempt at forceful removal and risk violence.
And it lasted how long?
It started that Sunday evening and peacefully concluded the following Saturday morning, so 6 days.
What did you learn from the whole thing?
I think I got a deeper understanding of what are the concerns and what is the pain felt by many of our students and their allies who joined them in that effort.
Did you consult at all with other university heads? I mean, you've got St. Louis University right at Grand and Lindell, so you've got Harris Stowe down the street. You've got Washington University up the street. Was there a sense that maybe St. Louis U was just the first stop and maybe you ought to be talking to other university heads?
not only was I talking with others, but my other members of the senior team were in conversation with their counterparts both locally and nationally about what was taking place and how we were handling it and how we were trying to bring it to a peaceful conclusion.
Did you study anything like Kent State, where things went just horribly wrong in a situation like that?
So Kent State did come up in our conversations. Many of us were very much aware of what transpired there, and obviously none of us wanted to have it end anywhere close to what happened at Kent State.
So the clock tower accords were a big part of what ended the situation. Talk about how those have evolved and how they've been fulfilled and where you go from here.
So at the as we began to sit down and have conversations, it was some of our minority students, some of our minority faculty, SLU administrators, and a couple of community organization leaders. We sat down and talked about what were the major issues at the heart of what was taking place on our campus and in our community, and what were the values and the mission of SLU, and what could we agree to as things to which SLU would commit itself moving forward, many of which we were already in the process of undertaking. We did not, in fact, conclude a final decision. The demonstrators agreed to end the encampment on the basis of trust, and then we continued those conversations subsequent to that.
And since the clock tower accords were adopted, how have they been made into reality?
So we continue to meet periodically, that initial group with others we've added from the community and from the campus, to talk about progress. We've made more progress on some rather than others. We're committed to fulfilling all the accords.
There's been some pressure from outside alumni and things like that. Maybe you capitulated. Maybe you shouldn't have moved a statue. Maybe you shouldn't have done this. Have you been able to, if not mollify, at least explain those types of actions to outsiders or others to their satisfaction?
So we received a great deal of praise from many, including the local interfaith partnership to the Attorney General, so forth, for how we were able to bring that to a peaceful conclusion. I've been in conversation with many people since then and have been invited to speak about how we handled it from groups that want to learn from what we did here. So we continue to engage in dialogue about what we did, how we moved through that process. There is, in a situation like that, no clear, easy script with a sheet that you check things off. I think you have to trust that you're living the mission and values of the organization and engage in conversation as broadly as necessary to work toward a solution.
I've been talking with people on campus, and they say that the biggest change over the past year is a sense of inclusion, a sense of consultation, a sense of, I mean, the phrase shared governance was very popular during the time of the turmoil involving Father Biondi, your predecessor. I guess having that sense of shared governance and being willing to discuss not only helped bring the Occupy situation to a successful conclusion, but has spilled over into other areas of what you've been doing. Was that what you were bringing to the university, you think?
I think I have each leader has his or her own style, and I think that the search and selection committee at SLU, when they hired me, really tried to determine what my leadership style would be. I would use those terms to describe my leadership style. I am who I am. We're all a little bit different. I believe that engaging in dialogue in large, when you're making important decisions, to the extent that time allows for it, is critical to both coming to a better decision as well as getting the buy-in of those who will be involved in living with whatever decision is made.
talk about the role Father Biondi might be playing on campus. There was some talk he might be in charge of art museums or other things. What role has he been playing, and what role might he have in the future?
Yeah, I think that Father Biondi will continue to assist with fundraising, with international recruitment, and with further developing our international alumni chapters will be the key things upon which he will focus.
As you've been involved over the past year, what difference has it made that you're not a Jesuit, that you're the first president of the university that's not a member of the Jesuit order?
Yeah, so I am the first lay person to be the first lay president at two Jesuit universities. I think that one of the advantages of being a lay person is that I can hold the order up and celebrate its members, celebrate its history in a way that would be uncomfortable for a Jesuit himself to do. And I believe in doing that. I'm Jesuit educated. I think it has been transformative for me, as it is for most of those with whom I speak who have been Jesuit educated.
Is there any difference in the way yet things are actually conducted on the campus, you think?
I don't think a Jesuit, by the fact that he's a Jesuit versus a lay leader, necessarily has a distinctive leadership style. I think leadership styles, I've known many Jesuit presidents, and there's great variation in their personalities and leadership styles, and certainly the same would be true among lay people. I think the key is the commitment to the Catholic and Jesuit mission, ideals, and values of the institution.
Many of the people that I talk with talked about the first year as a honeymoon period. Do you feel that that's the case, and are rougher times ahead?
I certainly hope not. I think it's been a tremendous year. I am thrilled to be here at SLU and in St. Louis. What's really what I've said and what others have said, which I think is fascinating, who have come in from the outside, is I knew SLU was strong coming in. It's even stronger than I thought it to be. And so that's been wonderful. I think it's been overall a tremendous year for us. I think the future is very bright. That being said, higher education, like many institutions since 2008, have found that this is a more difficult environment in which to operate. I think families are more economically constrained. The demographics are changing. So it's a difficult world in which to operate, not just in higher education, but I think it's a more challenging environment in business. That said, I think we're in a very strong position within this environment.
So finding that the university is stronger than you thought is a pleasant surprise. Any unpleasant surprises?
None that immediately come to mind, Dale. That's a question I haven't been asked, but nothing that comes to mind immediately.
If someone were to ask you, how is St. Louis different from what you expected, what would you say?
I'm really taken with, as I said before, and I mean this sincerely, the depth of the and passion about the commitment to mission that pervades the institution. I knew it was a beautiful campus coming in, and it is a beautiful campus. But how committed people are to the mission, want to live the mission, want to hold people accountable for living the mission, the strength of that was a bit of a surprise, very pleasant surprise. I'm thrilled to be in a city of this size and complexity of St. Louis with all that it has to offer, particularly in terms of the arts and the accessibility of the arts. I live in the Central West End. My wife and I love that area. It has, with the vibrancy, the diversity, the shops, the pubs, the restaurants, we're very taken with it.
I know last week you and were involved in the ceremony down at the Old Missouri Theater Building, another tenant coming in.
Yes.
Talk about the relationship between the university and Grand Center.
Yeah, the relationship is a close one, which I hope remains even closer. One of the very first people to reach out to me was Vin Schemel when I was named president. He visited me at Lemoyne in Syracuse. I was pleased that he took the time to do that. He made it clear, it was clear from our conversation, that Grand Center is important for St. Louis and important for St. Louis University. And so I am delighted that We have this very close proximity. We're two blocks from the studio right here. And that Grand Center is doing as well as it is, as well as Cortex, in general, the Central West End. If you look at this region overall with SLU, Cortex, Central West End, the hospitals that we have, SLU Hospital, BJC, the vibrancy of the retail and dining experience here, this is a very dynamic area.
If we were to be talking here next July, what do you think we'd be talking about?
How the second year was even better than the first.
In what respect?
You know, an institution that's on the move in a community that's on the rise with forging great partnerships. This region is very fortunate to have the organizations that it does, particularly in terms of higher education.
St. Louis University President Fred Pistello talking with St. Louis Public Radio education reporter Dale Singer. Join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape when he'll talk about Union Avenue Opera's new season. He'll also look at a program that uses dance to help empower girls age 7 through 17. And producer Katie Cook will examine the improv comedy scene in St. Louis. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk to members of an organization that helps couples improve communication and strengthen their marriages. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast on our website at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. The program is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.